Joey shuffled onto the sand first and sank to his knees.
Finally.
Vic knelt next to him and put a hand on his shoulder.
You okay?
It's like hell.
Vic checked it over. Anya could see the skin had already turned a nasty shade of dark blue, but it also looked swollen.
It's getting infected. You got a fracture somewhere, no doubt, but I can't figure out where it would be. And I sure don't want to go poking you and putting you into even more pain than you're already in.
Thanks.
Can you keep going? You need a doctor. Bad.
My brother needs one, too.
Yup, he does. No doubt he's lost a lot of blood.
Joey got back to his feet with Vic's help. Anya watched the waves crash on the shore. Joey smiled at her.
It's always so great seeing the ocean. There's something about it that brings me back home. Always.
It's beautiful.
You should see the beaches of Palawan. They're like pure sugar. Some of the resorts there are like paradise.
Maybe we can go there sometime. When you and Michael are better, I mean.
Good plan.
Michael came out of the jungle at last and looked at the other three.
We need to get back to Manila.
You have a plan for that?
Sure do. We head down to the beach about a mile.
And what's there?
A helicopter.
Are you sure?
Absolutely. There's a doctor there too. A clinic where we can get patched up.
Patched up is a bit optimistic for you two. I think a hospital stay is in order.
Vic, would you stop if this was your country?
No, I suppose not. But Anya and I can handle it. You should rest.
No way I could rest knowing the two of you were taking it on alone. I have to be there when it goes down.
So do I. Let's keep moving.
Anya helped Michael keep from stumbling too much on the sand, which was loose and hard to slog through. Her own feet seemed to sink several inches with every step she took. The sun was also brutal, and she felt suddenly exposed. Joey did pretty well moving on his own, but Vic stayed close enough to lend him a hand in case he needed it. Twice he almost fell, but he steadied himself and regained his footing. A mile seemed like forever across the sizzling sand, but as they came around a bend in the beach, she could see scattered rooftops come into view. A few boats bobbed in the waves just offshore. And she could see kids jumping in the waves.
Guess the sharks don't bother them.
We're moving away from the river's mouth. It's safer swimming there, but only just a little.
I bet you're one of those people who only likes to swim in pools, right?
How'd you guess?
The sun sent rivers of sweat down her face. She had to keep blinking to keep the salt from stinging her eyes. She wanted water desperately. Michael suddenly stumbled, and Anya slid an arm around him, and he accepted it.
Thanks.
Forget it.
You and Vic are okay, yes?
Seem to be. Just exhausted, mostly.
That's good. That's good.
They'll help us at this place?
Oh, yes. They know us here.
They do?
Yes. This is where we grew up.
Homecomings are always nice.
They will be once we find the doctor and get to the helicopter.
As they grew closer, the children saw them. Anya saw them running down the beach, their deeply tanned skin in sharp contrast to the white sand around them. Joey carried himself higher now. Michael pulled away from Anya.
You sure?
I have to walk in on my own 2 feet.
As they walked down the last 100 yards, Anya saw something else that buoyed her spirits. The rotor blades of a helicopter, sitting on its own pad, could be seen farther off down the beach. Her time in the jungle was finally over. From the air, Metro Manila looked pretty smoggy. Anya could see a thick blanket of brownish-gray air over the city before it finally seemed to dissipate farther out. She looked down at the various towns and cities dotting the landscape on the approach. Poverty was rampant here, but she could tell just by the rooftops who had money and who did not. They weren't in the smaller bell chopper they'd seen back on the beach. Once the villagers had spotted them, they'd gotten the doctor right away. He'd patched Joey and Michael as best he could. Michael refused the transfusion at first, until the doctor promised to ride along and do it in flight. Joey sported a flexible cast on his arm, and his color looked a lot better. He'd already washed down a boatload of antibiotics, but he too had insisted on coming along. Vic had immediately gotten hold of a cell phone and called his people. Once they were airborne, Vic gave the pilots the proper coordinates, and they'd flown to a small military base plopped down in the middle of nowhere. From there, they had a rushed meeting with a variety of the top brass, as Vic had referred to them, before boarding a Black Hawk chopper bound for Manila. Across the cabin, Vic worked the radio while plotting out points on the map. He had changed his uniform and grabbed a new rifle from the armorer while they were at the camp. He looked clean and serious, and Anya thought he was rather striking. She had managed to grab a quick shower as well, gratefully washing off the bits of moldy twigs, leaf litter, dirt, mud, and extensive grime. She had bug bites in all sorts of interesting locations. The state of her fingernails, not to mention her hair, was still unfortunate, but no one seemed to notice or care. She was dressed in a fresh set of urban camouflage fatigues. Along with them on this jaunt was a squad of other soldiers that Vic had referred to as Special Ops guys. They all wore grim expressions as they sat near Vic, talking and listening to each other on the radio. Joey and Michael held a quiet conference with each other. Every once in a while, Joey would nod at the picture of Agamemnon tacked to the inside of the cabin, along with a score of other faces known to be his associates. The fact was, finding the nuclear device was going to be difficult, if not impossible. Top military leaders on both sides of the Pacific had already been consulted. The government of the Philippines had ruled out notifying the public, saying it would simply create mass hysteria that they could not control. Vic had received orders to find and stop the person carrying the device, while the U.S. scrambled to get other specialized units in place in the event they successfully cornered the couriers. Skimming over towns and villages below, Anya wondered just how they were going to find Agamemnon and his couriers. Joey and Michael had insisted he probably didn't know who would be carrying it out, but Anya wasn't so sure. She'd seen Agamemnon up close and interacted with him. She couldn't believe that he would allow something so huge to be out of his control. He probably knew exactly how the device was going to get to Manila and who was carrying it. His ego wouldn't allow him not to know. Find Agamemnon, and they'd be able to stop the destruction. She was sure of it. It was already early evening now, and they were only just approaching Manila. Anya was worried they would be too late, but something inside her told her they still had time. The question was, how much? Vic had operational command of this unit, and the final decision about what to do and how to do it would be his. She didn't envy his job right now. Actually, she wasn't sure she envied anything right now, except maybe everyone who was oblivious to the unfolding situation below. She sometimes missed the mundane existence she'd enjoyed before she'd found the sword. The Black Hawk started to descend. Anya looked over at Vic.
We're landing?
Inside the city at the embassy. We've got a makeshift HQ set up there with agents from a bunch of offices already bringing in good intel.
Do they know what to look for?
They know enough.
Anya held on to the strap inside the cabin as the Black Hawk banked. She could see the embassy and the clearly marked helipad in the open ground at the back of the compound, as well as a few military personnel guiding the bird with hand signals. Through the windows in the buildings, she saw people rushing everywhere. The place was buzzing like a kicked hornet's nest. The Black Hawk flared and then gently set down. As soon as it touched the ground, the doors slid back on their rails, and Vic's team jumped out with their gear.
Stay with me!
Anya, Joey, and Michael followed him off the helicopter. A man in a suit came running up to him.
You Gutierrez?
Yeah. I'm Reynolds with Defense Intelligence. You and your people can come with me. We've got to set you up downstairs in the bubble.
As they walked, Reynolds handed each of them a red badge with the word Visitor stamped across it. At the door, a Marine guard in full combat gear eyed them and then let them pass. Reynolds led them to an elevator and pressed the button.
Obviously, people are a little excited about the whole thing.
Who else knows?
Just our people, but word spread through the embassy, you know.
As long as your local employees don't get wind and start notifying everyone. If they do that, Agamemnon will pull the plug on the op and go to ground until he can catch us all unaware sometime in the future.
We've kept a lid on it, and the locals aren't allowed in this part of the building anyway.
Good.
The rest of Vic's team came in and waited for the elevator. When it arrived, they all crammed inside and descended.
Mr. Reynolds, where are we going?
Do I know you? You look familiar.
Maybe from television. I was on a show.
Oh, that's it. Chasing History's Monsters, right?
Yes. Anya Creed.
Right. Anyway, we're going to the bubble. It's a secure room that houses our secret communications gear. we can receive direct traffic from Washington via satellite. The folks in power can stay in the loop, and we can get the latest intel on our targets.
The elevator doors slid open, and two more armed Marines met them as the group exited, checking everyone over before allowing them to proceed.
Okay, Gutierrez, your team needs to wait here.
Vic, Anya, Joey, and Michael traded looks. Joey glanced at the combat team that waited impassively.
We'll wait here with them. Just tell us what we need to know.
You sure?
Yes.
Okay, Anya, you need to come. You were at their base camp.
Okay.
Reynolds led them down a long corridor painted battleship gray before they came to a heavy iron vault door. Reynolds punched in a series of numbers and waited for his handprint to be scanned. The huge hydraulic door swung open. The bubble looked like depictions of the White House war room from any number of movies. There were banks of computers and huge video displays up on all the walls. Agamemnon's face looked down on her from 20 feet away. Giant digital maps of Metro Manila were displayed on other screens. Anya could see all sorts of dots, code words, and numbers appearing and disappearing on the screens. It was all quite overwhelming. Vic seemed in his element, though. He turned to Reynolds.
Run it down for me, would you?
We've got all the access points to the city under surveillance.
That's an awful lot of places to check out. You sure you got them all?
Near as we can. Obviously, we've got limited manpower, and the Philippine government is really letting us run the show on this. They've committed only one special unit from their intelligence branch to the cause because they don't want word leaking out about a possible nuke strike in the city.
What are their people doing right now?
Coordinating smaller teams of people using handheld nuke detectors. They've got a bunch of them scattered all over, as you can see on the map there. The areas marked in green are covered.
I see plenty more unmarked.
Yeah, we're getting some aerial reconnaissance teams up as we speak. They've got birds outfitted with higher-powered scanners that should be able to pick up the residue from the device. There's a good chance we can spot it from the air.
Anything else?
Your boy, Agamemnon, was spotted in town earlier today, right before you radioed in.
He's here?
Yeah, but we don't have him anymore. He slipped his surveillance team near the Robinson Galleria Hotel. We don't know where he is now.
Wonderful. Anything else?
That's about it. We've got plenty of intelligence on his known associates, faces mostly, but we figure every little bit can help. If one of the faces comes up from some of our other agencies, then we might get lucky.
What about the device itself?
Suitcase nukes are nothing new. The Soviets masterminded their development back in the mid-70s and finally got them in working order in the early 80s. With the fall of communism there, a lot of them went missing. And that's never really been made public, and we've got a good number of them back under control. But a few more found their way into the black market, where your boy picked one up.
And if this thing goes off, what kind of damage are we looking at?
Complete destruction of everything within 1 square mile. And in a crowded place like Manila, that's probably an easy 60,000 people dead.
Not including the fallout from the radiation cloud as well, right?
It would be even worse if Agamemnon manages to detonate it up high, like, say, on the top of a skyscraper or something.
How much worse?
Maybe twice the number of dead.
Agamemnon looked out over the skyline of Manila as the sun set. Throngs of people flooded the streets far below. Manila had one of the densest populations in the world, with many people packed per square mile. As such, it was a deliciously easy target for a man like him. He poured himself a fresh glass of wine and savored the taste.
Yes?
Wait here.
Agamemnon smiled. Mickey had managed to come through after all.
Did you have any problems?
Increased police presence at the docks, but nothing we couldn't handle. It's amazing what a few well-placed American dollars will do for a tired slave of the capitalist infidels.
I'm afraid I have some bad news.
What's that?
Eduardo is dead.
How did he die?
It was the American sniper he was sent to find. The sniper found him first. I am sorry.
Is the sniper dead?
It was a good question. Agamemnon had no idea if the sniper and the rest had been killed by Hector and his followers, or if they'd somehow managed to escape. With the kill team in place, Agamemnon had left strict orders not to contact him. Radio silence was most important at this phase, and only Mickey had the number to the cell phone he was using.
I don't know.
I thought you were going to kill him.
Agamemnon grinned. He could have lied, of course, and told Mickey that the sniper was dead, but it was better to leave it an unknown variable. The thought of the sniper still breathing would help fire up Mickey.
I can't be sure if he lived or not. I had to come here and make sure we saw this out to its completion. Surely you understand.
I understand. But for Eduardo's sake, I want to see that man dead.
Perhaps he's here now, in Manila. He might even be hunting you and your team as we speak.
How would he know where to look?
He wouldn't. But not knowing where to look wouldn't stop a man like him. He would be duty-bound to try and find you.
Yes, I suppose he would.
Agamemnon savored the edge in Mickey's voice.
How is our package?
It's fine.
You've inspected it?
Of course.
And all is ready for tomorrow?
Absolutely. I'm sure there will be plenty of developments when the sun rises.
And your accommodations?
Comfortable. And protected as far as I can tell.
Excellent. You should get some sleep. You have much to do in the morning. It's a shame I won't be there to see it when it happens.
Are you leaving?
Of course. I've chosen you for this mission because you are the only one I can trust. You've picked out the courier for the job, and I trust you know that he will not fail, that he will not have a change of heart. It's absolutely vital that he carry this out completely.
I'm sure he will.
Because if he did have a change of heart, then this would all be for nothing. Eduardo's death would be in vain, and the infidels would win. We would become the laughingstocks of the world. The fools who couldn't do anything right, like those bumbling idiots in Britain. This is what we have worked for. All of our hard work comes down to this thing, and its success is our success.
I understand.
You sound doubtful. You have concerns about something?
I'm just thinking.
If you have concerns, then by all means we need to deal with them.
With Eduardo gone, all I have left are my parents and my sister.
Remember, Mickey. They will be taken care of. I promise you your sacrifice will allow them a better life.
Agamemnon touched the first-class plane ticket to Beijing that was sitting on the table.
We need doers, not thinkers. That's what it comes down to. Otherwise, that sniper wins. The Americans win, and we lose.
We won't lose.
Agamemnon finished the wine and flipped the room service menu open. A little dinner would taste good right now. Perhaps some fish. That would go well with the Pinot Grigio he'd just finished. Yes, he'd have the fish. He smiled contentedly.
Your willingness to do this will make you a hero of your cause. You do know that, don't you?
I do.
We will sing your praises every night for many years to come, Mickey. Your name will live on in legend, and Allah will reward your devotion to his cause.
Inshallah.
Inshallah.
What time should I set out?
Rush hour starts at around 7. I would expect the most people will be out in about 8:30.
I will start out around 7 and ensure that I reach the target by then.
Good.
The sniper, if he lived, are you sure he would be in Manila now?
Without a doubt. I have reason to believe that he discovered the nature of our mission before Eduardo died. He would be duty-bound to report it to his superiors. Knowing how the Americans work, I'm sure he would be involved in the operation to stop us.
Then there's a good chance he will be nearby when I make my final quest tomorrow.
Ah, good chance indeed.
That makes me happy. If I'm able to kill him as I die, then all the better for all of us.
His death will be your vengeance. And Eduardo will be there to greet you when you arrive in heaven. I am sure of it.
As am I.
Sleep well, Mickey. And don't forget to make your final tape. You will want your message to live on past your final act tomorrow morning.
I live to serve our cause.
And you die to fulfill your destiny.
Goodbye, Agamemnon.
Be brave, Mickey.
Agamemnon closed his phone and looked out on the Manila night. Lights twinkled all across the city. People enjoyed their dinners and their lives, not knowing that come tomorrow morning, a nuclear bomb would bring havoc, chaos, and destruction to this city of fattened capitalists. Agamemnon grinned. He knew he was just as guilty of personal excess as any of them. But this was what it all boiled down to anyway. Money. It was the lowest common denominator in any struggle. Every war, every act of rebellion, every cause had its roots in the power of money. Somewhere, somehow, someone was getting wealthy off the work and strife of idealists and zealots. Agamemnon was no different. In an offshore bank account based in the Cayman Islands, he had the tidy sum of $50 million ready to use for whatever he desired. Agamemnon had plenty of desires. $50 million could buy him whatever he wanted. And he had any number of places he could settle when this was all said and done.
Yes?
Is everything ready?
Yes.
You have your ticket.
Right here.
We are looking forward to seeing you again. You've been away for a very long time.
He thought about everything he'd endured. Plastic surgery, years in the country, learning how to speak the language fluently, crash courses in human psychology, weapons, leadership, demolitions, and then the small matter of procuring the nuclear device. It hadn't been easy.
I am looking forward to going home.
You'll be a hero upon your return. You will make the airport in time? 5 a.m.?
Certainly.
Excellent. Payment has been made as promised.
It pains me I won't be able to stay home for long.
You'll be hunted all over the world.
At least until the man called Agamemnon dies. Then I'll be safe at last.
Another face.
It's the only way.
You have a doctor in mind?
There is one in Panama. I think he might be a good choice for my next identity.
He'll be a loose end.
Only until he's done with my face. Then he'll cease to be a problem. Like all of the others.
Have a safe flight.
Agamemnon shut his phone and stared out of the window. Perhaps he would order one more bottle of wine. He was in a celebratory mood. Anya watched Vic as he pored over the various reports that were coming in from all over the city. Most of them were meaningless, and Vic had the task of deciding which ones should be taken seriously. He looked exhausted. As the clock on the wall marked 3 o'clock in the morning, Anya poured a fresh cup of coffee and brought it to him. He smiled gratefully as he took a swallow.
Thanks.
You having any luck with this stuff?
Not very much, no. It's all a mass of paperwork, but very little else.
There's got to be something, though. Some little shred of information you're not seeing?
That's exactly what's most frustrating. The feeling that I haven't seen something I should have seen. That and that damn clock ticking away.
You sure it'll be today?
Yep. We have to figure they'll try and set it off during rush hour. Either morning or afternoon. That's when the city core will be filled with the most people. And that's exactly what they're after. Maximum casualties.
All those innocent people.
You should leave.
You keep trying to get rid of me. Haven't you learned yet that I'm an extremely stubborn woman?
Vic leaned back in his chair and kicked his feet up on the table.
I know you are. It's part of your charm.
My charm?
When we get through this, I'm going to take you out for a really good dinner.
I like that. You never told me how you're able to reconcile what you do for a living.
You sure you want to kill the mood?
We're in the bowels of the United States Embassy. I'd say the mood's already pretty well spoiled. This place doesn't exactly rate on the list of the most romantic places on Earth.
Vic slid his feet off the table and took another drink of the coffee.
What the hell, right? I was just out of sniper training. I'd been in special operations for a while. I'd seen some combat in a few places that were so far off the books they'll never even be discussed. But being a sniper's different. When you're in a unit, you have guys backing you up. You depend on each other. There's a sense of duty. That drives you, that bond of brotherhood. It makes it easy to do things that you might otherwise find unacceptable. Being a sniper is something else entirely. There's no unit. It's just you. You work alone. You got your rifle and your wits. That's it. First time in the bush, it's like all your worst nightmares come true. You jump at every sound. Your heart thunders so much you swear people can hear you coming. Until you learn to handle your fear, you're not 100%. And that's a liability. I got my first mission profile about 6 years back. I was assigned to South America at the time. We still had a lot of drug activity down there, and the administration wanted some solutions. Permanent solutions, if you know what I mean.
He stopped and looked at her with a sad smile.
What happened?
I got dropped via chopper into Bolivia and made my way cross-country to a remote mountainside. Holed up there. Living on hard routine for 3 weeks. Eventually, my target drove up to his vacation compound about a mile from where I was, as the crow flies. I watched that guy for 2 days. Learned everything about him. That's what it's like being a sniper. It's close, personal. You see your target like no one else. I watched that guy burp and fart and wink and smile. He was someone, not just a target.
That must have made it tough to kill him.
That made it impossible to kill him, until it was too late.
What do you mean?
I mean, when I finally had my crosshairs on his head, I couldn't take the shot. I let him get in his car and drive away.
You missed?
I never shot my rifle. I never carried out my mission parameters.
Well, you couldn't really be blamed, could you? It was your first assignment, after all.
I've blamed myself every day since then, Anya. Every day that I wake up, I see that guy's face in my head, and I know that I screwed up.
You can't ride yourself forever, though.
I already have. You know what the target did after he left his vacation home? He drove to the house of a government official who'd been making trouble for the drug cartels. He killed him there.
I'm sorry.
That's not the worst of it. The worst part is that this official's son was having a birthday party. This beautiful 8-year-old boy and all of his friends were having the time of their lives playing, and this guy walks in and kills not just the official, but every child in attendance. It was a bloodbath.
My God.
You ask me how I reconcile what I do? I don't have to reconcile anything. I have the memory of my failure always fresh in my mind when I go out and take down a target. If I hadn't frozen, if I'd done what I was trained to do that day back in Bolivia, those children might still be alive. Instead, they're dead because I couldn't pull the trigger and end the life of a truly heinous piece of garbage.
Anya felt as if the world had stopped turning. Vic's eyes bore into hers with such intensity she found she couldn't look away. He looked down for a moment before glancing back up, an apologetic smile on his face.
Sorry.
No, I should be the one apologizing for bringing it up. I shouldn't have forced you to relive something like that. It was inconsiderate of me to do so.
You didn't know. Don't worry about it.
Did you ever get him?
When I found out what had happened because of my incompetence, I went into the bush and stalked him. It took me 4 weeks to get close to him again. But this time, I didn't hesitate. I put a bullet right through his temple and dropped him dead.
At least you made sure he never lived to do more damage.
He'd done more than enough already, but it was a closure of a sort. I could sleep again after that. The memories, though, they don't go away. I don't know if they ever will.
Anya sat back in her chair, slid her hands behind her head, and regarded him.
And now you stalk a new target.
Yep. And time's ticking away.
The door opened, and an analyst walked into the room.
Gutierrez!
Yeah?
Just got a report in from one of our assets in the Chinese embassy.
The woman handed Vic a slip of paper before slipping back out of the office. Vic read the transcript and frowned.
What is it?
A Chinese ambassador has left Manila.
Is that unusual?
Ordinarily, maybe not, but given what's coming, it looks a little suspicious.
You think the Chinese are involved in this?
I don't know.
What would they have to gain from nuking Manila? That doesn't make any sense. They'd be outcasts at the United Nations, and the whole world would ostracize them.
Ours is not to reason why. Ours is simply to figure out and stop things from taking place.
I guess.
Come on.
Where are we going?
The communications room.
Vic and Anya entered the communications hub, where a full team of people still worked, and every one of them looked as exhausted as Vic. He headed over to one desk run by a young sergeant who looked to be only 20 years old.
You heading up the cell traffic surveillance?
As much as we can pluck out of the air, given what we have for interception equipment.
Is it good stuff?
Fair, I guess. It's not the latest NSA generation, but it handles the workload pretty well.
Can you pinpoint cell phone traffic originating in the Chinese embassy for the last 12 hours?
That could be a lot of phone calls.
Yes, it could be.
The sergeant typed away on his keyboard. After a minute of typing in search parameters, he leaned back.
Looks like there were 20 calls placed within that time frame.
That's it?
Yeah, the Chinese are a little paranoid about people using cell phones inside their embassy. Now, some folks don't care and do it anyway. But mostly, they're the higher-ups who think they're untouchable. And that works out pretty well for us, since the intel is top-shelf stuff if they get lazy.
Vic studied the screen of the times and durations of the phone calls.
Well, what about destinations? Can you narrow down those calls that were made to phones here in Manila?
Sure.
The sergeant typed a few more keys and then waited for the results to scroll across the screen. Vic pointed.
There, what's that one?
The sergeant highlighted it, and a new screen came up.
The call originated in the office of the Secretary for Domestic Exports. That's one of our favorites. We think he's actually with the Intelligence Bureau out of Beijing, here running Chinese assets throughout Southeast Asia.
Where'd the call go to?
Hang on, I can get a grid reference.
He typed a few keys and a map of Manila showed up on his screen.
There, somewhere in this area. Now, the best I can pinpoint it is to about 100 yards square.
What's there? Anything of importance?
You got the shopping mall, the Jollibee restaurant, and the Imperial Hotel.
Hotel?
Uh-huh.
You think he's there?
Worth a shot. What else do we have to run down? Okay, Sergeant, I think we're gonna need your help for a few more minutes.
As the sun crested the horizon and the new day began in Manila, Anya was riding in a car down the already clogged streets with Vic next to her, wearing a headset, coordinating teams on the ground.
I want a mobile perimeter established, but make sure he can't see you. If he sees us coming, he'll detonate. We can't have that.
Between them in the footwell, Vic's new sniper rifle lay wrapped in its carrying case. He hadn't had time to test fire it yet, or zero it, as Vic called it. That meant he'd have to hope that if he needed to use it, the rifle would be reliable. Their driver, one of the State Department regional security officers, swerved to avoid a jeepney crowded with people on their way to work. Anya marveled at the elongated jeeps left over from World War II. The fact that so many of them were still in operation was testament to the ingenuity of the Filipinos who drove them.
Anya, got the latest information on cell phone activity from that area in question. Looks like he made a call to another number we didn't know about. We're tracing it now.
He might already be moving.
We have to hope that if he is, we can find him.
And how would you do that?
We might just call him.
Agamemnon settled back into his first-class cabin seat, looking out of the window and down at the Manila metropolis. He'd gotten out just in time. The ticket in his pocket guaranteed that he would be welcomed back home in Beijing. He smiled. Beijing, after all these years, he was finally going back to his true home. He'd spent so many years undercover, and it had been so long since he'd looked at himself in the mirror, the time seemed forever lost. Still, with the amount of money he'd been paid, he could go anywhere and do anything. He would, too. Right after he got himself a brand new face. He flipped through the magazine from the pocket in front of him. There were several cover stories about high-profile celebrities. Agamemnon smirked. Perhaps it might do him some good to have a truly handsome face this time. He would then have the luxury of concocting a brand new life story for himself, just as he had for Agamemnon all those years ago. Who would ever have suspected that the ferocious leader of Abu Sayyaf was in fact a deep cover agent of the People's Intelligence Bureau? Agamemnon hadn't been so sure the ruse would work when he'd been approached so long ago. He remembered the day he was called into the gray masonry building outside of Beijing and met by a gnarled old colonel who sat him down at a desk.
We've got a mission for you, Comrade Chung, in the Philippines. It's long. It will be the toughest thing you've ever done in your life. But if you're successful, we will see to it that you are rewarded beyond your wildest dreams.
Why the Philippines?
The country represents an important alliance with the Americans. If that country is weakened from within and chaos ensues, we will be able to exert more influence in the Southeast Asia theater.
Because the Americans will be too busy helping the Philippines recover.
You'll see. We know you would grasp the logic of the operation.
But why me?
You've got no family. Nothing to hold you back. Nothing to look forward to. You're a loner in your unit. We'll teach you how to be a leader. You could quite literally disappear tomorrow. And no one would ever go looking for you.
And that's what I am going to do, isn't it? I'm going to vanish. Will I get a new face?
Well, you can't really pass for a Filipino unless you look the part now, can you? The man you're going to see is the best in the world at this type of thing. We have used him several times before. The most important thing is your ability to lose yourself absolutely in the character you are going to portray. You must become another man. There can never be a time when you think about who you used to be. Never again will you be Comrade Zheng.
Is it hard letting go?
It has already begun. You don't even realize it yet. But you're already starting to forget yourself. And when I introduce you to the man you eventually will become, you will lose a little bit more of yourself. The process may even seem magical.
Agamemnon closed his eyes and smiled as he leaned back in his seat. Yes, the old colonel had been right. Pure magic. Mickey woke up, refreshed and determined. After speaking with Agamemnon, he'd done as he'd been instructed and made his death video. As he pulled on his pants and socks, Mickey reflected on Eduardo. The empty place that had formed when he'd heard of his friend's death was now full of rage and determination. He was doing something far greater than anything he'd ever done before. He glanced at the unmarked videotape sitting on the table and felt some comfort. He didn't have much in the way of worldly possessions, but Agamemnon's reminder of his promise that his family would receive $50,000 for his sacrifice soothed him. That was more than enough to see his younger sister through school, and perhaps she'd have a better life than the one he'd had. He walked to the closet and opened the door. In the back, the blue and white backpack rested against the wall. Mickey bent down and hauled it out. He checked the detonator and made sure the time was set properly. He started the countdown and then checked his watch. He had just over 90 minutes to get to his target area. Mickey slid the backpack on. He was ready to go. Vic listened to the voice speaking to him and then glanced at Anya.
We got the trace on the building where the call was received.
Are we going there?
No, we got a team nearby already. They can hit it faster than if we try to get there.
Anya frowned. It was getting right down to the wire. Vic plugged the phone into a special jack in the car's back seat. Anya watched him work.
What are you doing?
Patching us in so we can listen when they take the building down. They're going in about 2 minutes.
Eagle One to control.
Go ahead, Eagle One.
We're at the staging area, please advise.
Anya found her heart beating faster. She could visualize the men getting out of their vehicles, about to step into harm's way.
Control to Eagle One, you may commence your approach.
Copy that.
Vic leaned closer to the speaker. Somewhere across town, the special operations team was about to hit the building where the nuclear device was.
Eagle One to control.
Control, go.
All units at final checkpoint, we have eyes on the building. No movement. Say again, no movement.
Control to Eagle One, you have the green light. You are go for execution.
Copy that. All units, go, go, go!
Anya could almost picture them crashing through doors and windows, trying to get control of the building as quickly as possible. She closed her eyes and hoped to God they'd find the bomb.
What's taking so long?
Give him a second.
Eagle One to control.
Control, go.
Building secured, all units intact.
Eagle One, do you have the package?
That's a negative, control. We do not have the package. Say again, no package. This place is deserted.
Eagle One, this is control. Clear out and stand by for further orders. Control out.
Anya slumped back against the seat. The bomb was still out there.
Shit! Anya, get out that map, fast.
Anya spread out the map of Metro Manila that they'd brought with them from the embassy. Vic took it from her and traced his finger over the area the search team had just covered. From there, he drew a line leading right into the heart of the city.
He'll want the quickest route. Every second he's out there adds to the risk.
Will he drive?
Doubt it. Too much of a chance it'll get stuck in traffic. He's got to be in Makati at the height of rush hour, when there will be maximum casualties.
That leaves him walking, what, about 2 miles?
Yeah, about that, yeah.
Vic's phone buzzed. He grabbed at it.
Yeah? Yeah, send it right over.
He hung up and looked at Anya.
The search team found a suicide video left by the courier. Calls himself Mickey. That ring a bell with you?
Nope.
Yeah, well, they've got a still coming in, so we can get a look at this guy and see who we're actually after.
That's good, right?
Very good. Now we have a definite target.
Mickey walked the streets heading to the city center. The sun beat down on his head and shoulders. He hadn't known that carrying the bomb would be so difficult, and the sun's heat didn't help. He already felt all sweaty. The bomb was heavier than he'd realized. He knew appearances were important, so he tried to look as normal as possible, but Lugging a 50-pound nuke in a backpack wasn't exactly the most normal thing he could be doing. He looked around, trying to hide his fear. What if they knew he was coming? What if they knew what he looked like? Mickey mentally shook himself. How could they possibly know that? His communications had been secure with Agamemnon. No one knew who he was. No, there should be no trouble making it to the target area. Mickey shifted the weight, tightened the straps, and continued on his way. Anya stared at the picture on the screen on Vic's phone.
He looks young.
They always are.
Always.
Disillusioned with society. They're natural recruits for extremist philosophies. It's easy pickings for someone who knows how to do it the right way.
And you think Agamemnon chose him for this job exclusively?
Knowing Agamemnon, he probably had a number of candidates picked out for it. But he lost some of his men in the jungle.
Thanks to you.
I don't know if Luis was his choice for courier. Luis was known. Agamemnon would want someone we didn't know about. A lower-level soldier who was impressionable and eager to make a name for himself.
So how do we play it?
We find an interception point, and then we stop him.
Stop him? As in, kill him?
Yes.
Mickey headed east, tracing his way along the route he'd memorized earlier. It was the quickest path into the city. Sweat soaked him. It almost felt as if he was back in the jungle. But who would have thought that he would have this chance to do something this great for the cause? Certainly not him. Maybe not Eduardo either.
Eduardo. My poor Eduardo. Shot and killed by the American sniper. Well, this is for you, my dear friend.
Mickey straightened and walked with more energy. Slowly but surely, he advanced toward the target.
The trick will be positioning myself where I think I can get the best shot off without any collateral damage.
Collateral damage?
It's unlikely. The ammo I use is designed to stop once it enters the brain. It won't exit and cause another wound. It should just drop him like a bag of cement.
How?
It enters the skull in fragments, turns the brain into soup.
He seems so young.
That kid has a nuke strapped to his back. And besides, he's 21 years old, according to the intelligence we've got on him.
Anya glanced at the data sheet that had just come over the car's fax. Mickey Felemanana had been born on Cebu and graduated from high school just before his recruitment into Agamemnon's gang. He had a large family left behind.
His family might be counting on him.
For what?
Money?
Anya, you're letting this get to you on a personal level. You have to shut it off and concentrate on the mission. I'm sorry this kid is so young, but he knows what he's doing.
I know it. I just wish there was another way.
Vic pointed at an area on the map. Anya peered closer.
You're going to position there?
Yeah. It'll give me the largest field of fire.
Are you sure that's how he'll come into the area?
We don't have a lot of choice, do we? If he's trying to get there in the shortest amount of time, then the route we drew is the one he'll take. We've got to get him before that bomb goes off.
The bomb felt heavier. Mickey frowned. The police activity seemed more than it was normally. Granted, he'd been in the jungle for the past week, but he'd been here enough to know what was normal and what was not. The number of sirens he heard was definitely not normal. He paused. They might know about him. The timer would detonate the bomb in just 20 minutes. But 20 minutes was a lot of time. And if the cops knew about him, they could grab him and then defuse the bomb. Then the entire mission would be a bust. He glanced around. To his left, a small bus station offered restrooms. Mickey headed for it. Vic fit the earpiece into his ear.
Radio check.
Good.
You ready?
Anya nodded. Vic grabbed his rifle, opened the door, and they slid out. Together, they rushed toward the large building in front of them.
You sure this is the best location?
It'll give me the angle I need. You coming?
Yeah.
Mickey reemerged from the bathroom and pocketed the remote detonator. He felt much better now. He'd turned off the bomb's timer and would use the remote control switch to set it off instead. That way, if the cops did know he was coming, he could simply blow it up right before they grabbed him, and the mission would succeed. He turned left, continuing to head toward Makati with a quarter of a mile left to travel. Already, the number of people swirling around him had grown exponentially. Ahead of him, thousands more entered the buildings that ringed this portion of the city. So many people, he thought. So many who would die instantly. He felt almost godlike. Vic spread the blanket on the roof of the building and then unzipped his rifle case. As he slid the rifle out, Anya could see how hard and focused his expression had become.
You okay?
I've got a checklist in my head I have to go through.
Anything I can do?
Take the binocs and start scoping out the scene below. Let me know if you see our boy. Gotta adjust for wind and elevation before I can shoot.
Anya took the binoculars and looked down from the roof. The scene below was chaos. People swarmed everywhere. How in the world were they ever going to find a single man carrying a bomb?
He'll have a backpack. It's the only way he can carry it in. Look for a backpack and you'll find him.
Anya kept her eyes on the binoculars, even as she heard Vic sliding a magazine into the sniper rifle.
Are you almost ready?
Almost.
Anya's eyes continued to search the crowd. He had to be out there somewhere. But where? All she could see were thousands of people crushing into the streets and sidewalks. Buses whipped past. Small motorcycles zipped down the streets. She heard car horns blaring, almost communicating in some unspoken language. How was she going to find him before it was too late? Mickey felt relief as he spotted the wide, gently sloping entrance to the main concourse at the Galleria Mall. On either side of the steps leading into the exclusive shopping area, fountains arced gracefully through the air. Pink rose bushes lined the steps, and the marble columns at the top perfectly framed the entire picture. Mickey looked at the mall and hefted the backpack again. That was where he would die. He and everyone else.
I'm set.
Anya slid out of Vic's way. He settled himself with the barrel of the sniper rifle eased over the edge of the roof. His fingers found the scope sitting atop the barrel and slowly clicked off a few settings on two of the dials.
I got a good picture.
Anya continued peering through her binoculars. Mickey had to be down there somewhere. He had to be. But where?
There.
Where? You see him? Where is he?
Damn it. False alarm.
Anya breathed again. She glanced right. Was that a backpack? She turned back and refocused her eyes.
Oh my God.
Mickey took the steps slowly, savoring his last conscious decisions. Who would have thought that his life would boil down to these last few minutes? His senses were unnaturally sharp, his perceptions heightened. He breathed deep and tasted the smog-laced air tinged with the delicate scent of rose petals. He missed his family. He missed Eduardo. Could he really kill these people? Could he really detonate this bomb? He'd be responsible for thousands of deaths, and lingering sickness would infect thousands more. Was this what God had planned for him?
I see him. Yeah, I got a good picture here. His angle's wrong. Need to wait until he turns around.
Vic could see Mickey standing there on the steps. Once he turned around, Vic could fire and take him out.
Almost there, Anya. Anya?
He looked up from his scope. Anya was gone. It was weird that doubt would creep into his mind at this moment. Mickey frowned. Certainly, this was a natural thing. Probably all suicide bombers experienced this self-same realization right before they blew themselves up. Still, it would be nice if he could have seen his family one last time. He wasn't even supposed to be doing this. Eduardo was the chosen one. He was the one who was supposed to carry this bomb into the hearts of wealthy Filipinos. He was the one who was supposed to bring them to their knees and subject them to the horror of what their money had wrought. But now, he was here. He took a breath. It was time.
Mickey.
He turned, and Anya could see the fear in his eyes.
Anya, what the hell do you think you're doing? Get out of the way so I can take the shot.
Not yet.
What did you say?
Not yet, Mickey. I'm not here to hurt you.
We've never even met.
I know, but I was in the jungle camp.
Agamemnon told me all about you.
Did he? Did he tell you how he kidnapped me by accident and how he was going to cut my head off?
Some sacrifices have to be made for the greater good.
Is that what you're doing here?
Yes.
Is it? By killing so many innocent people, you think that will help you achieve anything?
We will achieve much with my action.
No. It will mean only the deaths of many people who don't deserve to die. Not even you.
Agamemnon told me he would look after my family in Cebu. That he would give them a lot of money. They would be free of the poverty that enslaved me.
He told you that?
Yes, and that is why I must die.
Damn it.
Vic slid along the roof, trying to get a better angle on Mickey. What the hell was Anya trying to do? She was blocking his shot.
Control to Sierra One. Is the target acquired?
Stand by, Control.
Vic shifted again. He could just make out the side of Mickey's head beyond Anya's shoulder.
Get out of the damn way.
Control to Sierra One.
Stand by, Control. Stand by.
Vic moved again. He had to get the right angle to make the shot.
You don't have to do this.
You don't understand.
Make me understand.
There's no time left. My time is at hand.
Mickey reached into his pocket. Anya jumped toward him. She saw Mickey's hand start to pull something out of his pocket. And then she saw his entire body shudder as an invisible hand seemed to reach out of nowhere and slap him hard. He slumped to the ground.
Sierra to Control.
Go ahead, Sierra One.
Target eliminated. Repeat, target eliminated.
Control to Sierra One. We copy. Good shooting.
Anya knelt next to Mickey's body. His eyes were open, but bloody. Vic was right. He was dead before he even hit the ground. Anya looked at the detonator that he'd barely managed to pull free. He would have detonated it, she thought. He would have. She felt a tangle of arms lift her back away from Mickey's corpse as the soldiers, agents, and scientists rushed to make sure the device would not explode. It was over.
That was some stunt you pulled back there in Manila.
Anya looked at Vic as he shrugged into the doctor's lab coat. Before he'd put on the putty to alter the shape of his nose, he'd looked 1,000% better with his face clean and face paint free. The close shave did him justice as well, showing his strong jawline and the laugh lines she'd suspected were there but hadn't yet seen much evidence of.
He was too young to die. He was just a boy.
A boy who knew exactly what he was doing. He would have detonated the device. You know that.
I didn't want to believe it, but yes, he would have. I saw it in his eyes when he tried to get the detonator out of his pocket. I think in that split second I realized I'd made a mistake.
Luckily, as soon as you started to jump forward, you cleared out of my way and enabled the shot.
I wish I could be happy about that.
You don't need to be happy. You don't need to be upset with yourself about not being happy. This kind of thing comes with a job.
It's not exactly a job I want. I was happier doing other things.
Yeah, well, hopefully soon you'll be back to doing what you love.
And what about you?
Me? I'll be back to doing what I do too, I suppose.
Traipsing through the jungles?
Living out of a backpack and humping a rifle all over the place? Yep. It's living.
If you say so.
Are we going to argue about whose existence is more meaningful now?
I hope not.
I heard there was quite a shake-up in Beijing after the Philippines government confronted them about their involvement in an averted nuclear terrorist act.
Oh?
Word is that a very senior colonel in the Chinese army was executed for his rogue status in planning and executing the entire operation.
So, officially, the Chinese weren't attempting to cause a huge ecological disaster in Southeast Asia?
Supposedly, no.
And you believe it?
This kind of thing happens more than you might want to know. There's no such thing as good government, only a motivated one. And one government's motivations are always at odds with another.
And the people?
They get caught in the middle. Usually get squashed for it.
That's a pretty optimistic viewpoint.
Let's change the subject. By the way, you look quite beautiful today. Did I mention that?
No.
Vic came up behind her and gave her a kiss on the neck.
Well, you do.
She turned and kissed him then, full on the lips, pressing herself into his body. She could feel how heavily muscled he was, and yet the way his hands wandered over her body, he could have had the lightest touch around. When they broke apart, Anya smiled.
Some kiss.
Likewise.
You have any leave coming up?
I could put in for some time off. What'd you have in mind?
Nothing tropical. How's that sound?
I could spend some time somewhere cooler. A nice mountain lodge. A roaring fire.
Late mornings spent sleeping in?
Yeah.
Sounds like a plan.
Vic finished buttoning up the lab coat and handed her a white surgical mask.
As soon as we're done with this, I think we should catch a plane and go for it.
You can phone in your leave?
Well, maybe.
Heads up, he's on his way.
Anya's eyes met Vic's as he heard the same warning. All playfulness fled, and he was all business. Anya tied the surgical mask over her mouth and nose.
Game time. You sure about this?
Absolutely.
Vic slid on his eyeglasses and subtly altered his body posture.
How do I look?
Fabulous. But you're an almost perfect match, I think. That extra bit of nose putty really helps.
Shame, actually. I could get used to having a straighter nose. When I take this stuff off, it'll be right back to that rather Romanesque schnoz.
Which I happen to like. Now get in there.
Showtime.
He opened the doctor's office door that connected to the exam room and walked through, leaving the door more than halfway open. Anya picked up the stainless steel tray holding the clean towel and syringe and waited.
Good day, sir. Sorry to keep you waiting. Had to send my receptionist away. Wouldn't do for her to ask any awkward questions.
Indeed not. Now, are you sure you understand what I am after? I'm not accustomed to arranging plastic surgery over the phone.
I am certain of the need for discretion, a new pleasing face for you, and utmost reliability on the quality of work. I am worth the price you will pay, I assure you. Now, kindly remove your jacket and shirt, and let's get started immediately. Nurse?
Anya squared her shoulders and strolled through the door. She looked into the face she'd grown to know so well. Agamemnon watched her as he took off his shirt, his eyes immediately going to her legs, showing under her lab coat. Anya set down the tray, instead of hitting him in the face with it like she wanted to, and began preparing the hypodermic needle.
You'll be here with us a few weeks, I understand.
Yes, just long enough to get the operation completed and make sure there will be no infections.
Please, lay down on the table and allow me to get you relaxed.
Agamemnon smirked at her and lay down, exposing the vein in his right arm.
Very well.
You've had a long journey?
Feels like it, yes. But I'm looking forward to a long rest.
Anya bent over and slid the needle into Agamemnon's arm. She pressed the plunger down and sent the drug mixture deep into his vein. As she did, Agamemnon looked at her.
You're a very beautiful woman from the nose line up. Too bad you have to hide behind that mask.
Thank you.
You look a bit familiar. Have we met before?
I don't think so.
She withdrew the needle and turned back to the table.
Are you sure?
How are we doing?
Your nurse looks familiar to me.
Are you sure?
I think so. What was that you gave me, anyway?
Just a muscle relaxant. Doctor, is it okay if I take my mask off now?
I think that would be fine.
Anya turned and faced Agamemnon. Slowly, she took off her mask, and when she stared at him, his eyes widened.
You!
Anya smiled. Agamemnon tried to leap at her, but he only toppled off the table onto the floor. Vic got him back up on the table.
Now, we can't have you hurting yourself. Not yet.
Doctor!
Actually, no.
Vic tore off the plastic nose putty. Agamemnon's eyes widened again.
This can't be.
Yeah, funny thing about that. Turns out your pal, the Colonel, knew some very interesting things. Right before the Chinese put a bullet in his head, they got him to talk about your vacation plans and all. You know, the trip to see the good doc and get yourself a brand new face. Maybe go back to being Chinese after having been a Filipino for so long. Anyway, as part of their atonement for their rogue officials, Beijing let us have you, instead of sending their boys to finish the job.
Awfully kind of them, wouldn't you say?
Agamemnon tried to sit up, but his body wouldn't obey his commands.
I wouldn't. That drug Anya slipped you is potent stuff. You've got just enough willpower left to listen to us tell you about your money.
What money?
The $50 million the Colonel wired into your account for successfully completing your assignment.
You promised Mickey that you would send his family money for his sacrifice. Mickey's dead, and he would have followed your orders, I know that. So even though the nuke strike didn't happen, Mickey completed his assignment. The least you can do is honor your promise to him. We just wanted you to know we helped you out there, since you have no actual honor yourself.
That nice little chat your handler had before he died revealed your bank account and all the bits of information needed to seize the funds. A nice check is going to help out Mickey's family, and a lot of other desperate people to hopefully keep them from turning to manipulative scumbags like you. Anya? I think we're just about done here.
I think so. Agamemnon, I hope you find justice in the afterlife. You've committed some pretty heinous crimes against humanity.
I won't be judged by you.
You already were. And now it's time for your sentence to be carried out.
Vic walked over and held another needle in his hand. As soon as Agamemnon saw him, he tried to struggle. But the relaxant Anya had administered had turned his body into a disobedient mass. He flopped once, and then Vic simply held him down with his free hand.
Vic, I'll be outside.
I'll be along shortly.
Anya looked one last time into Agamemnon's face. But now the bravado was gone. And for the first time since she'd known him, she could see the fear welling up in his eyes. Tears started rolling down his face.
Now you know how all the people you've killed felt in the last few seconds they had on Earth.
Vic leaned down, already aiming the needle at Agamemnon's arm. Anya closed the door behind her as she walked out.
Rogue Angel Sacrifice is a graphic audio production. Rogue Angel trademark owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 2009, Worldwide Library. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, Tim Getman, David Coyne, Jonathan Watkins, Tony Nam, Terrence Aselford, Michael Glenn, Joe Brack, Thomas Penny, Ken Jackson, Michael John Casey, James Lewis, Yasmin Toison, Richard Rowan, Chris Rowan, Nathaniel Perry, and Greg Reinfeld. Red Shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. The Rogue Angel theme was composed by Chris Rowan. Additional original music by Chris Rowan and Matt Webb. Book adapted for graphic audio by Cheryl Hayes. If you enjoyed Rogue Angel, be sure to look for the Vadas War series, available at Rogue Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
You would allow your beloved husband to be tortured for the sake of your outlaw adopted daughter? We will take his nose first, right to here. It makes for a gruesome sight indeed, and assures that poor Gravis will be forever an outcast.
Why would you be doing such a thing? And yourself claiming to be a man of God?
Why, you ask? Because of your daughter, foolish woman. Because your dear Jilly's evil alliance with the heretic Avalyn could bring about the end of the world.
Why are we down here?
Here is where I will find my answers. Get back! Would you like to see again the world of the living?
The girl. How sweet that capture will prove. Perhaps I might find time to take pleasure with her before I present her to my superiors.
Where are the guards? Who are you?
A friend of Avalyn Despris and a friend of Bradwood.
Oh! By the gods! Good show! Oh, but you'll get your due, Francis the Fool! Search every passage and every room! All doors barred and guarded! Now! Now!
Don't miss R.A. Salvatore's Demon Wars Book 2, The Demon Spirit Part 3. Available now from Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series, available only at www.graphicaudio.net.